Welcome to the closing evening session for Saturday. This session is being recorded and will be available for purchase after the presentation ends. As you leave tonight, we want to thank you all for coming and being part of the Sunstone Symposium. You have now participated in a tradition of Mormon history that is 40 years long. Mormonism can be what we make it, and your participation helps make Mormonism a little more diverse, interesting, and inclusive. Please support Sunstone by making a donation, subscribing to the magazine, and by attending the regional conferences. The next regional conference will be in Frankfurt, Germany, so that's kind of exciting. There's nothing like traveling the world with your favorite Sunstone friends. Please join us. Sunstone cannot exist without your financial support. We want to keep the community growing into a healthy, vibrant way to engage in Mormonism. Thank you all for being a part of that. All right, so this session is going to be 90 minutes, I'm going to tell you a little bit about it. The session is going to provide a space for learning resources, going to be a little workshop-y, for learning how to confront and disrupt racism when you hear it in your Mormon spaces, in your spaces in your community. Joanna Brooks is going to go ahead and lead you all in a workshop of sorts. So let me read a little bit more. Joanna Brooks is the Associate Dean of Graduate and Research Affairs at San Diego State University and the author and editor of 6 scholarly books on religion, gender, race, and American culture, including the book A Mormon Girl, A Memoir of American Faith. She is the editor with Hannah Wheelwright and Rachel Hunt Steinblick of Mormon Feminism, 40 Years of Essential Writings, and with Gina Colvin of Decolonizing Mormonism, which will be dropping soon. So it's exciting. All right, so we're going to go ahead, and I'm going to give it to Joanna. So,
and I think Gina has offered to give our opening prayer, so we'll take her up on that.
Eto mātou mātou e te rangi, kia tapu tō ingoa, ka tuku ake mātou, whakawhetai ki a koe mō ngā mea nunui ki rungi a mātou. Whakapainga hoki I tēnei kōrero rero I tēnei wā, whakapainga hoki ngā kai kōrero, hei a whini I a rātou ki te whakaputa atu te aroha me te tumanako ki rungi a mātou I te ngua tapu o Ihu Koraiti. Āmene.
All right, good afternoon, everybody, brothers and sisters. How are you? Good. Okay, good. An overview of this session. I'm not going to talk at you. There will be breakouts. There will be discussion. All of the materials we're using this session, if you have a device, you can go to my Facebook personal thing, you find me, and they're there. And they should be visible just to everybody, the public. I reset my settings to the public. So the outline, this document you can see, and 2 other documents we'll be referring to. So I encourage you, go there, open the stuff. We want to acknowledge as we convene this session to create a space, as Misha said, to where we can begin to organize as Mormon people and especially take responsibility for those of us who identify as white Mormons to start dismantling racism in our communities. We want to acknowledge the leaders who came before us, including the many, many Mormon people of color who did this work long before we stood here and made this work possible. So if you are someone who has learned something from a Mormon person of color in the work against racism, stand up. If you've learned something from a Mormon person of color in the fight against racism, stand up. Okay, I want you to say their name out loud so we can honor their leadership. Okay, so Darius Gray, Kathy Stokes, Tammy Andra, right? My other teachers in the secular world have been Richard Yarbrough and Paula Gunn Allen, and many, many other people have been very patient with me. Said, thank you. We want to honor and acknowledge all of our teachers and leaders who are people of color. All right, you can sit down now. And we also want to acknowledge that we are on the land of the sovereign Ute people, and we honor their custodianship of this land to this day. Okay. This represents a collaborative effort, and I have the microphone because I'm the bossiest. I embrace that. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Emily Jensen is very nervous, but she's agreed to sit up here with me. But there are several other collaborators who have helped us get to this moment, including Rebecca DeSchweinitz, who's a professor at BYU, and Benjamin Park, and who else am I forgetting? Emily Clegg Curtis and Amy Hickman and Yeah, a lot of people have had their hands in this, and we want that to continue to be the spirit of this. They're not all with us today. There's lots of family reunions and birthday parties and illnesses. So we're going to do this work. We want to remember their help this. And we've also sought the advice and counsel of Mormons of color and invited them to participate in giving us direction and correction as they have had energy and interest that we recognize this is our work to do. We're taking responsibility. We're showing up to do this work, but we learn from them, follow their lead, but also pick up our part and pull it along. All right, why am I leading this session? My main qualification is bossiness, and as Emily said, just sort of getting in and liking to work. But, you know, I've been writing and studying about race in higher education for about 27 years, which means I've been making mistakes for 27 years and trying to learn from my mistakes for 27 years. So I hope that, my own experiences of learning and undoing and redoing will be of use to our community as we all learn together to acknowledge the mistakes we have made and continue to move forward. And one thing you need to know about my leadership style, I tell people, I work in the secular world, so I'm pretty direct, and I can be very, like, practical and okay and yes and no and directive. Don't take it personally. If that's an unfamiliar style to you coming from a female person, don't take it personally. It's just how I'm also a working mother, so every minute counts because I'm usually paying by the hour. So when I move things along, don't take it personally, okay? Everyone good with that? Good. All right. And I just want to follow that by saying, I want to express my love and my gratitude to the organizers of Sunstone, to Lindsay and her committee, and to all of you, and to the robust, beautiful, diverse Mormon community we find here, and ever more diverse. And I've been very, very touched this year to see our diversity unfolded yet another layer with some of our brothers and sisters who we pushed out decades ago, now walking among us again. That's a good thing. So thank you, and thank you for being in this room. We're going to talk about racism. We're going to talk about white supremacy, and we're going to talk about it in ways that are going to be comfortable at first, and then we're going to talk about it in some ways that are going to be uncomfortable. And we want to make space for that. We want to acknowledge that when I've been doing my work on my own racism, I have had feelings of shame, embarrassment, real embarrassment, like hide in a hole. Anger at myself, confusion, sorrow, and you will too. And you could have them all in the next hour. And that's okay. That's part of the work. But the feelings we have can't get in the way of the work. Does that make sense? We're going to do the work even as we have the feelings. But we want to honor those feelings. So at some point, I'm going to make you write on Post-it notes. We have colored Post-it notes here. I need some Post-it note Sherpas. It will be a Post-it note distributor, and we need some other ones. So if you have feelings during this session, like maybe we even start now, I am talking about race makes me feel anxious. How many of you does that apply to? Talking about race makes me feel anxious. Good. Write it on a Post-it note, but we're putting it to the side. You can put it on that whiteboard right there. We're going to hold space for our feelings, but they're not going to get in the way of our work. Does that make sense? So if you feel ashamed, that's okay. That's part of our work. We have to acknowledge sometimes as white people unlearning racism, we feel shame, right? All right, so we're passing the post notes out. If you have a feeling, you can have a feeling. That's good. Own it and post it right here. We're going to have our feelings, but we're not going to let them get in the way of our work. Okay. All right, so a little background on how we got here. All right, what moved us to action? So, in June, on Twitter, Mormon people of color started a thread that Ben Park, who's one of our collaborators, captured, called hashtag Dear White Mormons. How many of you saw the hashtag Dear White Mormons thread? Okay. I'm going to click over here. Ben storified it for us. And this is a link to the storify is on my Facebook page. It's the top post, so you can go there. And so I'm not going to spend a lot of time to this, but I want you to know what led us to this moment. So Dear White Mormons is a series of tweets designed to sort of raise, or that were raising consciousness, or hoping to raise consciousness among white Mormons about the ways, sometimes unintentionally, our conduct is opprobrious, is oppressive to our brothers and sisters of color. And so it started, and then it kept going. And I want you to read all these. We just don't have time to read all of them now, but you can find them all through Storify on my Facebook page. All right, so down and down, and they keep going. And then other people joined in, right? And we're sharing their experiences, and some of them are, I hate scrolling through these quickly. We have a lot to learn from them. We have a lot of work to do. So please take the time when you can. If Dear White Mormons bothers you, ask yourself why. So pushing us to sit with our discomfort. And then something happened. As these tweets accumulated, giving us important, right? Important insights. Let's listen and listen hard. Then some folks from the Mormon alt-right started chiming in. Hang on. Let me get down here. Okay. Let me find one. Okay, I'm trying to find it. Way down here? No. Oh, critics there. So here we go. So, critics of this thread. But then it got personal. They were attacking our brothers and sisters of color, and specifically Tamu Smith and Zandra Vrains, and using Mormon images to harm our brothers and sisters of color and vilifying them. Now, this is not an unusual thing. This is one of the uglier dynamics of Twitter, that outspoken women of color especially get assaulted verbally on Twitter all the time, but this went on and on and on, using images from our past to affirm white supremacy, calling our brothers and sisters of color fake Mormons. Okay, I'm not going to linger too long on that ugly, but that set off some of us thinking. And we, as all great Mormon projects, we're finding each other on Facebook and saying, what can we do? Do we invent a bot to, like, zap all the tweeters who are hating on our brothers and protect them? Do we do like the Whistlers and Whittlers did in Nauvoo and start tweeting back at around the people who are attacking our brothers and sisters of color on Twitter? Like, what do we do? And this is about the time it came to light that, have you seen this image? Do you know what the frog image is? Who can explain what that frog image means? Go ahead. What is it? So there was a conference, thank you. So there was a conference this spring convened by an alt-right Mormon blogger of folks, all Mormon dressed, all Mormon folks, using Mormon texts for the alt-right, for alt-right purposes, okay? And, you know, this is really horrifying to us. And we were talking through Anthro, what do we do, what do we do? But then we realized something, and this is where this session gets even harder. We came to the conclusion as a group that the alt-right is not aberrant. They are an extreme articulation of everyday white racism. Okay? They're not a monster, they're an extremity. There's a difference. Does that make sense? Okay. And that's hard. It's an extreme manifestation of everyday white supremacy, and Mormonism is a comfortable space. They feel comfortable using the pictures of Joseph Smith, using pictures of all of the prophets of the church, using scripture to support an alt-right generation, to attack Mormons of color. They feel comfortable. So that's hard. That means that we can't just say fighting the alt-right is like, let's get these guys with the Pepe masks. It's about spaces we helped create. What is white supremacy? I'm going to learn that term a lot. And as a group of collaborators, we came to this definition. And I'm going to read out loud, and you can read, follow along. But this is hard to sit with. And you could start feeling shame right now. You could be feeling angry and uncomfortable. And if you are, own it. Put it right up here. Who wants to be the first? It's okay. We have to own the feelings we have, because they're not going to get in the way of our work, but we have to own that we have them. White supremacy is a name for the worldly system of power that gives white people more access to power and better life chances than others based on our perceived skin color and ancestry and the sound of our names. So what does that mean? That means that just by the accident I was born with this skin to my parents, statistically, I'm going to be wealthier, I'm going to be healthier, and I'm going to be safer in a physical sense. Just by the sheer accident of my birth, right? Statistically, if race weren't a thing, if racism weren't a thing, there would not be, you could not statistically differentiate by races who was going to be wealthier, healthier. Just by the accident, my kids came from me and have a certain skin color. And I didn't create that system. I was born into it, right? And I've been cashing in on it my whole life, really not meaning to, but it was a system that built up over centuries. But I've benefited, and it's hurt people. So white supremacy is that name for that system. The belief that racial inequality is okay, that it's just the way it is an expression of white supremacy. That's hard. When I sit with that, I've been always ready to say, I'm racist, I get it. But to realize I've been in a white supremacist system, that's hard. How many of you feel that's a little hard? It's hard to hear. It's hard to feel. Okay, write it down and own our feelings. If we own our feelings and recognize them and give them space, then they don't get in the way of our work. Does that make sense? It's okay. You're going to be ashamed. You're going to be afraid. You're going to be anxious. It's okay. We're going to do the work. Okay. White Mormons like me, my parents who I love, who are good people like all of us, have created and maintained spaces where white supremacy and white racism is comfortable. I am not pleased that I grew up being taught what I was taught, that the priesthood ban had a reason. I love the people who taught me that. They also taught me about the atonement and the plan of salvation, but that was wrong. It was wrong. I don't like that. It hurts. I am sorry, but I'm not beating myself up, right? But we created and maintained spaces. How long did it take before you were able to say out loud the priesthood ban was wrong? We weren't even saying it till 2012, some of us, right? How long? It was wrong. Does it feel weird to say it right now? Do you have a hesitation? When did you let go of your hesitation, though? Can you remember? How long did you back into it? What? But that it never had any good reason. Well, good for you. You were raised by a different kind of... I mean, I was raised mainstream. How many of us who were raised mainstream have had a hard time until very recently? Okay. All right. If you're feeling uncomfortable, good. That's okay. Name it, claim it. There's just three post-it notes up here. Do I need to, like, create a moment where we all close our eyes, don't look at who's posting their feelings? Go post your feelings right now. Who's feeling ashamed and uncomfortable? Put it up. It's okay. Own your feelings. Okay. White Mormons created and maintained spaces where white supremacy and racism is comfortable, and it is our responsibility to change this, working in conversation and collaboration and taking our lessons from Mormon people of color who have led. Does that make sense? It's our mess. It's our mess. We made it. I wish we didn't. I love this people and I love this church, but I wish we didn't make this mess. But we did. So we're going to clean it up. We're going to clean up after ourselves. What have we done as a people in the 40 years since temple priesthood restoration to change? What have we done? What have we done? Can you think, what have we done? What have we done? What have we done? Have we done much? Have we organized? Have we agitated? Have we educated? Have we done much? Have we changed the architecture below it all? Have we changed our insides? Have we changed? Have we done? What have we done? Okay. Is it enough? How many of you think it's enough? Okay. How many of you think we've not done enough as a people to clean up after our messes? Okay. Your courage is beautiful. I am so glad you're doing this. I know I'm driving hard, but this is important. It's so important. Thank you. Okay. Do we assume that changes in Mormonism come only from church leadership? How many of us have been waiting? Waiting, waiting, waiting. On this or that? How many of us have been waiting? If we said it nice, if we said it right, if we dressed right, if we walked right, they would hear us. They have their business there about. No disrespect. Honor what they're doing. They have their hands full. but they are not on this. They're not. This is not a priority right now. Do we have other models within Mormonism for change? Do we have anything in our history that shows us how change can happen within our community that doesn't wait for a directive from headquarters? Think. Say some out loud.
LGBT issues.
There are changes that have come up.
Temple.
Right? Okay. Can we call, I identify as a progressive Mormon. I don't know what label is on your name tag, but I've been loving reading all of the name tags. They're so good. Jane Ann Peterson says, I'm a come at me bro Mormon. I'm like, yeah, okay. Can we call ourselves progressive Mormons if we don't work to end racism?
No.
I am the biggest tent Mormon there is, but I'm about to lose my mind if I see one more war between podcast personalities over money. If we are not angry about racism, we do not deserve the term Mormon, progressive Mormon. That's it. That's it. You don't get to be a progressive Mormon if your whole thing is going to be just about recovering from your faith crisis. You are something else. No, and a faith crisis is hard and it's real and it hurts. But we have to do something with our experience of hurt. We have to put it to work. Because that was if we were lied to, we were also lied to about race. Okay? We have to put that hurt to work. Okay. So can we call ourselves people of faith or Christians or humans if we don't work on racism, right? So I want to start drawing some lines. I want to make sure we don't just be comfortable in our progressive Mormonism. Like we got it all figured out because we figured out they didn't tell the truth about Joseph Smith. Nope. It's not enough. The term progressive has to mean more. Has to mean more. Okay. Does everyone know this name and this face? Okay. He was one of us, right? His funeral was held in an LDS church building. He was killed by police, a black, young black man, without what I view as substantial, well, you can't even justify. Anyway, you can never justify. So, is this name new to you, to us? Did we show up for this? Did we show up for this? I am so proud of the work we've done showing up for this. I am so proud. I am so proud of the work we've done showing up for this. I am so proud. You can be an Orthodox white Mormon and have a gay kid and it's going to radicalize you. But you're probably not going to have a black kid unless you are married in an interracial marriage and it's not going to come home to you. We have to bring this issue as home to us as if this was our own child, right? This is our son. This is our son. This is our person. Was killed by the police because he was black. Okay? This is our issue. This has to be our issue. We have to show up for this the way we show up for this. We have to do that. It's ethical. It's ethical. It's time. Okay. I know. I get pretty excited. Okay. This is hard. This is hard work. We were trying to figure out what we could do. We could do bots. We can protect people on Twitter. But then we realized we have to work from where we stand. Each of us, because white supremacy isn't just those people at that conference in the Pepe mask, right? I wish it were. I wish we could just organize and just fix that. It's not. It's in the spaces we made that make that comfortable. And we have to make those spaces no longer comfortable. And we have more than enough people in this room to start. And it doesn't have to be drama. It starts with learning. It just starts with learning. And we don't even have written stuff. We have how many of you have read the Race and the Priesthood Topics essay? Okay. It does what it does. We're grateful for it. We're glad it's there, right? Is it enough? Okay. So we're not perfect, but we collaborated. And if you want to go to the Google Doc that's on my Facebook page, and I'll switch over to it now. We developed a document, Shoulder to the Wheel. Shoulder to the Wheel, right? Resources for Mormons Working to Dismantle Racism and White Supremacy. Here are a list of co-authors. We have an advisory board, but they hadn't all signed off on it, so I didn't want to put their names up here in case we did something wrong, which is very likely. This is a draft. Your feedback is welcome. You can message any one of us on Facebook or email. You can find us. It is long. It is not short enough to read right now. It is about 20-something pages. But it goes through some basic vocabulary. It goes through changes the church has made to address racism in the last few years. It goes through some basic definitions of racism, white supremacy. It uses Mormon scriptures to talk about why racism cannot be a part of our worldview. It is written from, for, to a Mormon LDS perspective. It quotes Mormon people of color. They are the authorities we quote, the people who have done this work, okay? It gives very practical, it gives general historical information, things that I've been doing this 27 years. I learned things writing this. You will learn things reading this, okay? How many of you know what redlining is? Okay, you will learn what redlining is if you read this. All right, so some basic overview about racism and white supremacy in general, and then about stuff in our own faith. With really clear, really clear information about our own past. But importantly, it also talks about how systematic racism and white supremacy impact white people, because this is our mess, and it's taken a toll on us, right? Here are some of the ways it's taken a toll on us: amnesia, isolation, anesthesia, denial, conflict avoidance, racial anxiety, guilt and shame, enmeshment, fragility, rigidity, paralysis, negligence. These are spiritual problems that come from racism, that come from white supremacy. So it goes through these, and then look, because we're Mormons, it's super, and then there's things that need to be changed, evidences of racism in our own practice, and then very practical things you could do at family home evening. I'm scrolling down. Bullet points. These are perspectives of people of color, but things you can do in general, and specifically things we can do as Mormons. This is from the list of ideas published in the Salt Lake Trib that LaShawn and some other folks helped develop. How many of you read that article? Oh, it's a really good article. And then even more, next steps, all gospel-oriented, all LDS-based, reading scriptures, reading Official Declaration 2, reading the Race and Priesthood Essay, watching, you know, series of videos available in the church's media library, reading books by Mormons of color that we list here, watching Nobody Knows. So just very visiting Jane Manning James's grave, thinking about her, right? Things that anybody at any place on the faith spectrum can do. Very practical, just to start the conversation, start learning. All right, we made this. It's not perfect. How many of you are willing to read this? Thank you. How many of you are willing to share it with one person? Bam. Beautiful. And then ask them to share it with one person. All right. It is not perfect. It is not finished. We want your feedback as well. And what we want to do now with the balance of our time is we want you to break out into groups. You can move these chairs. I checked. They're not bolted. 10 or so people. I want you to have a conversation, if you would. What can we do now? Maybe using this tool. How can we get this tool out? I'm asking you to take a leap of faith that it's quality work, but I swear to you, I put everything I had into it, and so did my 8 collaborators. It's not perfect. We could use your feedback, but how can we use this tool? What's the best way to get it out there? And what are other ways we can organize in our communities to make our Mormon spaces less hospitable to racism? Okay, are you willing to do that? Talk to group up in 10, all right? Just groups. You can move your chairs, look at each other. If you're having feelings, write them down. How many of you are having... Good. All right. We're good. Okay. Bringing it back. I want to bring us back by sort of looking at some of the feelings that have been bubbling up. White feelings. No, I mean, but it's important to acknowledge these and honor these, but then not let them get in the way of our work. Right? Someone felt devastated. Just bringing it back, we're going to talk for a second about some of the things people posted on this board. We're going to acknowledge the feelings. How many of you had some tricky moments in your discussion groups? How many of you are lying if your hand's not raised? Because there's a history of race, and it's not simple, and there was conflict in your group. If you don't acknowledge it, it's okay. How many of you had a little conflict? How many of you felt a little uncomfortable? Good. Okay, someone felt devastated. How many of you felt devastated by thinking about racism and past racism and current racism in the church? Disgusted. Daunted. What does that mean, daunted? It's too much. right? Sick to my stomach. Ashamed that I waited so long to step back. Although I hated it, I didn't take serious action until the problem became about me. Excited. How many of you feel hopeful that you can take a small step? Yeah, that's right. Guilt? Gross. How many of you feel gross? Uncomfortable. Can't speak in a clear way. I love that. That's honest. How many of you don't feel like you have the vocabulary yet? You need to educate yourself to be able to talk better, more effectively about this. Good. Angry? Guilt? Anxious. How many of you feel anxious when you talk about race? A lot of us are anxious. I've heard in many groups, anxious about losing status and credibility with your friends and family if you're bringing this up. But then there are also people of color in our groups who remind us, welcome to our world. If you need to not care about this issue to have status, you don't want that status. All right? Who can agree with that? If you need to shut up about racism to keep your status, that's a status that's not serving you. It is hurting you. It's making you sick. Right? Right? Okay. I'm not giving you a chance to say no. You're not going to say no to me right now, but that's all right. Shackled. Being taught growing up that we were born into certain families on purpose. Yeah. Respecting authority too much. Is that something we do sometimes? And why? Because if we respect authority, we get what? Status, access, privilege, resources. I feel guilt for my own past racism. Good. Guilt's okay, but it's not useful. We just need to get to work. Does that make sense? You're going to have guilt, but don't use it as a cover. It's okay. It's okay to have sorrow, but then you keep moving. You sorrow, you take your lesson, but you keep moving, right? Guilt is not going to help change other white people or yourself. Guilt is this, right? Shame, right? It's just time to learn and make mistakes and move. Study, educate, speak. Okay. Afraid of confrontation. That is one of the qualifying features of whiteness. You get to join the white club when you don't confront other white people. And if you break that rule, what happens? Something happens. You get slapped down and you lose status. But that's the status that makes us all sick and it kills people, right? Uncomfortable promoting myself. Who said that? I don't want to call you up. Someone feels like they're promoting themselves. Coerced into what?
Virtue signaling.
Oh, I don't know that one. Oh, are you the wokest white person? Okay, good. Well, you know what? That's fine. That happens. Set that aside. Do you have some action steps your group came up with? Okay, it happens, but we're just going to keep on checking, and we're not going to, like, look for cookies. We're going to do the work because it hurts people, right? Not doing our work to clean up our mess hurts people. We can't stand that anymore. Okay, what'd you come up with in your groups? Emily and I are going to take notes. So you all were supposed to have scribes. Okay, and we know you talked about a lot of important things, hopefully some practical things about how to use the tool. We're asking you to take it on trust. This is a good tool to use. And you'll give us feedback. Who wants to start? What can we do practically?
Okay. Just what do you think is important?
Okay.
All right, listen to this.
So our group
starting here, everyone eyes over here.
Our group came up with be bold enough to give lessons, including Declaration 2 from the Doctrine and Covenants. Have it be a topic of your family home evening, whether at home or someone in our group does a family home evening at church. Maybe bring that up as a lesson topic. Be willing to give up some of your power and credibility to be an ally. Speak up. There's a tragic story of someone who's visiting teacher, I'm not sure which one, was being incredibly racist and saying very prejudiced and awful things. And she could tell that the companion, the white companion, was uncomfortable but did not speak up. And we asked, what do you wish this visiting teaching person would have done? And she said, to say, this conversation is making me uncomfortable, something like this, that this isn't kind, this doesn't sound kind, I don't think that's true at all. So to name it and to not just sit there silent. Listen to people of color and don't assume that we as white people know everything and have all of the answers. Make space for people of color to tell their stories. That's it.
Keep going.
We came up with...
Sister Stokes spoke up. Sister Stokes spoke up. Sister Stokes, what do we need to know? Don't assume you have all the answers. Don't assume we have all the answers. Never mind. Well, go ahead. Keep your group.
Our group came up with four potential actions. Number one, take a systems view. Become aware of the systems in which racism occurs and understand, think, and act systemically. Number two, exercise courage in speaking out. Be willing to risk our status and to speak the truth in love. Number three, listen into the experience of people of colour. Talk, listen, learn, walk in their shoes, understand their experience and their lived experience. And number four, organise spaces to get together, to spaces that are safe to learn, to develop action, and to be honest and to support each other in doing something collectively.
Okay, great, thank you. All right.
This group, middle group.
Too. I wouldn't have offered to be the scribe.
It'll be fine.
I'm just kidding. Okay, so we talked about, the first comment we talked about reaching out to the brethren to ask them to publicly kind of bring, you know, over the pulpit, bringing a stop to this, but if that feels out of reach, reaching out to your bishoprics on, like, the fifth Sunday for certain trainings. We did this in our ward last week where there was, they called it implicit bias, though, right, Abe? Where they talked about, there was a couple in our ward that had a biracial group that, or couple that they had had a hard time, and they had been, they had suffered in our ward, and so that was brought up, and it worked out really well. So talking to your bishops about that, taking opportunity to obviously speak, bear testimony, things like that. Let's see, using social media maybe to circulate what we are learning today, but also the reading. I wrote this down there. This is something that maybe Joanna could do, but providing material to even like Radio West or like, you know, stations around here to encourage a conversation. Taking people aside at church in a non-threatening way to kind of tell them if they say something that came out as racist and how telling them how it came across. One balance that we found in our group was how to call out racism without shutting down the conversation. And that's a balance that I would love to hear you speak to, that we would love to hear
we
you speak to.
We worked on it together as a group, and there's a lot in the document that I think will help.
Okay, great. Yeah. So that was something that we kind of went back and forth about. Using, for those of us who are white, using our white privilege to speak out, but while also owning our own racism to encourage other people to reflect on their own. An interesting comment, stop connecting our pioneer history to black history, so stop saying, oh, yes, we know how, you know, this feels, because we obviously don't. So stop doing that. Stop trying to commiserate in a very surfacey way. And that was it. That was it.
Okay, so that group. Next group, please keep it going.
Who's next?
So we thought of similar things to many of you. Additionally, we thought of putting this document on a ward's Facebook page. Also, a lot of wards or relief societies have book groups. We could offer literature readings to these groups so they could discuss it that way. Kathy Stokes said that we should ponder and pray about how best to proceed so that we're guided and authentic. A lot of speak boldly coming from our group. I don't know your name, but Tamarin, Tamu, in her ward, offered to her bishop to talk to the youth who are preparing to go on missions about some of these issues so that they don't get blindsided on their missions about these topics. And so the way she presented it to her bishop made him think, oh, this is a good idea to have a conversation about this. It will be proactive and preventive of future problems. So, and attend Genesis, that came up at the end, just help educate us.
A Okay, so we talked about the formation of informal groups. Like a lot of wards have book clubs, and maybe a school has a student groups that they are at liberty to form for themselves. That those are opportunities for us to create spaces for us to have discussions about race. And in church, we have the opportunity to have those sort of discussions as well, whether it be teaching lessons or fast and testimony meeting or something along the lines. There's a lot of opportunities we have in our formal meetings that we can bring up conversations along these lines. It can be uncomfortable, but there it is. We talked about discussing with older family members that may have more racist views than maybe further back in time, that maybe not as racist as we are today, but you know, something that we have a relationship with those people, and we have the opportunity to have discussions about race with the people we have relationships with, because those people we have the most opportunity to make changes with. We talked about the importance of using correlated materials, perhaps the things you have in your example in your handout, because it creates more credibility with the people you're discussing with in the Mormon community if it's a correlated material. Along the same lines, we discussed the need for, if you are advocating these things, that you need to be a kind of person that pays their tithing, that goes to church, that does those things, so that you maintain the credibility as, well, you're righteous. You can be discounted if you're a wicked person, that your ideas are not
valid. So should I not be leading this? Should I not do this right now? Should I not lead this group? Should
I have everyone absolutely no idea how righteous you are.
I'm telling you, I'm not that kind of righteous. But this is really, credibility is coming up everywhere. Do we yes. have to be observant traditional Mormons to do this work, even with other Mormons? Can we afford to wait?
It depends on I'm sure it depends on the format we're doing it. If we're doing it in sacrament meeting, then we need to be...
Okay, so you're going to do it in your circle, but I'm going to do it here, and I'm going to get you.
You.
And you're going to go do it in your sacrament meeting, and
exactly.
I'm not going to do it in your sacrament meeting. But I can't play the credibility... Not all of us can play the credibility game.
Granted.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Because
granted.
That's also a status game.
Yes, well, I mean...
Okay.
A true blue Mormon might have less credibility in a Sunstone environment, if you will. So, I mean, we have to play the credibility within our circle.
So, we're all going to work in our circles. We're all going to lift from where we stand.
Yes.
So
yes.
Can we say that differently? Because I don't want anyone to feel they can't do this work because they drink coffee. We can't afford that. We can't afford it. There are people who can speak to groups I can't speak to, but I can speak to, see what I'm saying? But it has to start somewhere.
Yes.
Okay, sorry,
yes.
Tamu had a hand. Right. Right.
So you have to have people that actually can go
right.
and speak in those circles to the
that's right.
And who have the ear of the person that speaks to the masses.
That's right. But I can't wait for them to start because they're not starting.
No, you can't wait for them to start if they're not starting, but also if you're not at church, then you're not speaking to the
right.
groups that are going to carry the message forward.
No, I hear that. I hear that. I think there's both. I think there's room for all of us. Yep, yep. Okay, keep going.
All right.
We interrupted you.
No, that's fine.
We man-terrupted you.
And then, of course, we need to use examples, not just right from an African-American, but we can use examples that span race internationally, whether it be from other countries, other continents, that can say these are examples of good saints doing good things regardless of what the color of their skin is. I just repeated myself. It's our relationships that make those changes. That as we convince people, as we treat people with respect and love, they will value our opinions more and be better persuaded than if we're yelling at them and they shut down. We get better response with honey than with vinegar.
I have a good story, and then we'll go to the next group. So, thank you, group. No, I won't tell my story. There's a curse word in it, but you'll ask me later about the honey and vinegar approach. I'm related to people who have a different point of view from their culture, which is, you know what attracts, you know, the saying is, you know what attracts flies, honey or vinegar, honey. Yeah, you know what attracts most flies of all? Yeah. Okay, your group.
Okay, so we actually were tackling a specific situation of a
predominantly Hispanic Spanish-speaking ward in a predominantly and elite white stake outside, and young women at camp not really wanting to go to camp and youth activities because of the racism that they're feeling. And how do you tackle that? And for us, it was really, how do we, as people that are not in that stake, contribute and help find solutions to tackle? And so some of those, I think we, and none of us took notes. So we were all very much engaged in the process, but was very much of, not only if we can somehow be the kind of the bad cop raising from the outside while still being honoring the wishes and protecting the people within, that they are not negatively impacted by our voice of agitation from the outside, so that when a gentler voice within can start speaking, that it can be heard. But also to maybe do a fireside or some other approach as a stake, but veil it as like love one another or love, and in some other thing, and then kind of once it's everybody's there, then sort of do a slow walk down into this is really what it is. And but sort of kind of lead people into it, because if people know that it's going to be about race, people may not, I mean, especially in that type of a situation, won't show up. And then how we can also then take that to our own and be those people, to that voice, that it really does require finding somebody in stake leadership to take that mantle and actually be the voice in high council meetings to kind of agitate and to kind of talk for that, that we can take that in our own stakes and start doing the talk and start getting the people to do the talk, because it's really the white men, they're the ones that are in power. So until right now, until they listen to other white men saying we don't want this.
Do we want to push back on that a little bit, Sarah?
What?
Do we want to push back? I mean, yes, in the institutional church, yes, the power. Yeah. And this is the credibility question. This is the prestige question. This is the status question.
No,
is that a theory of change that's going to work for us?
Well, I mean, nothing else will, but I don't think that that doesn't mean that we don't, to get, but we still need to get to agitate for them to actually be convinced. It has to be made super unpleasant.
Well,
and they have to recognize, I mean, for them, I think there has to be a recognition. Now this is just me talking. A recognition that they feel recognition of the impact of that for themselves.
Okay. Well, that's different. That's slightly different.
Right. Right, and that's the thing, right? Like, I'm talking out of my...
No, but So we have to get... So the goal is to help more people who are not people of color feel this as their fight, too.
Exactly.
Okay, and so we have to put it in gospel terms. The document does that, but get buy-in. That's a different argument than only they can change things,
not,
right?
True.
But I can't live in that world.
They need to buy into the fact that it needs to change.
And that means taking the risks of losing status and credibility and more. But that means being convinced that this is harmful to us the way Prop 8 was harmful, not just because we cared about gay people, because it was a wrong use of our church. Yes. It is a wrong use of our church to quietly support racism. It is harmful to us, as those of us who identify as white people. It kills us, makes us ugly, isolated, and rigid. All right, go, and then Tamu, back row. Where's the microphone?
Yeah.
He's also got a YouTube channel.
So I go to BYU, and I'm, you know, right there in the area. And I think it's very important to do or doing, like, really starting a conversation and shaking things up. But if you're talking to someone about this, and they're going home, and they have a Cleon Skousen book on their, you know, shelf, how effective is it going to, you know, I think we have to go for the sources that are very much ingrained that we don't want to, because if, like, I won't ever say the sentence on my Facebook, Black Lives Matter, even though I believe that. I know it's going to make people freak out, and I don't like that I won't say it, but I know that anything else I want to bring up, they're never going to listen to me ever again. And I know. Well, they should look at me and be able to know that I think they matter. But
why is all the pressure on you? Misha's right. We have to. Why are you in a war? Why are you ashamed to say Black Lives Matter at BYU? Where is that in the gospel? Where is that in the gospel?
No, I agree. I just know.
So these people need to make a safe space for you. Are you all willing to make a safe space for him?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's our job. So what I hear is that we have to stand and not and take the heat so that that space is safer, right? That people of color are tired of doing this work. It's up to us. We have to stand in our wards. We have to stand on our BYU. We have to stand wherever we work. We have to take the heat. We have to take the heat. Okay, whose hand did I miss? Sister Stokes.
Can I say something? The reason I say that, you have to ponder and pray, is so that you call down the power of heaven. For if indeed we believe that we are the body of Christ, as the church of Christ, we have the power to do that. We are tired. It pains me more than I can tell you. To see somebody her age that consumed by this. I am 81 years old. And every group comes to America and they grow and flourish, and we are still at the bottom of the heat. Other, in terms of the church, we've been coming hat in hand. But, and understand, I gave a talk in state conference about 3 or 4 years ago about God's gay children that we are obligated to love. I am glad the gay guys and girls or whatever raised hell and they got some concessions. We are still waiting. Ordained women have done greater things than they realize or are satisfied with. And all our lives are changed because of some of the things they've done. And we are still waiting. And when you say others of color, let us recall that the Polynesians, the folks weren't affected by the ban, and they didn't let it touch them, and they just started being friendly to us. The Africans hate us. The church loves the Africans because they bow their head and say yes. Elder Satati, the African 70s, said he did not represent American blacks because he didn't know them or understand them or some bullshit. And I hope he don't think he represents them white folks. But prayer, focus, commitment. We are talking about the second great commandment. We may be talking about the first because white supremacy puts yourself before God. But indeed, we are talking about the second. And for this reason, I ask you to be thoughtful and prayerful and kind as you move to do whatever you then are prompted to do. Nothing will happen. We cannot use hate for hate. We cannot. It is not the way of Jesus Christ, whom we say we follow. I also want to thank each one of you white folks that is here. It gives me hope. You can only do what you feel confident and empowered to do, but you are here, and I thank you for it. And whether you do nothing or a lot, know that I love you. Thank you.
Should close right there and honor that benediction from Sister Stokes. But at the same time, I want to make sure we didn't miss anything. And I want to honor Misha, what Misha brought up about, look, a practical thing is there anti-racism training for faculty at BYU? Is that something we can start asking and demanding and organizing around?
And
NPC. Mm-hmm. And for missionaries and for et cetera, et cetera. So there are practical things we need to do, and we need to do them with a fire. With a fire. That's what I hear from Misha said. With a fire, right? It killed us. Prop 8 killed our hearts. Did I kill yours? It hurt. Did we feel that hurt? Can we feel that? Why don't we feel the same hurt then? Why don't we feel the same hurt? Why don't we feel the same hurt? Why doesn't it kill us? Okay. So are there any other practical suggestions? I have a couple questions. Tamu, and then I'll wrap up with a practical thing. But I want to, Sister Stokes gave us the benediction. But want to hear Tamu and then some practical things. Okay.
I really don't, I feel bad speaking after that because that was beautiful. But I need to say this. I hear a lot of people here saying that it's white men. White women sleep with white men. You're giving your power away too easy by putting it off on them. You're not off the hook. You don't get to be absolved from it. You're connected to it. You have power. You have more power than you know. Keep the panties up.
That needs to be heard. Okay. A couple practical things, then we're going to close up with thanks and with go ahead. Sorry. Okay, we're all going to lift from where we stand, and we're going to have ideas. And we're going to figure out some way to stay in touch after this, so we can keep organizing. I know where to find some of you. I have a thread on Facebook right now. If you want to be a part of further conversations, go tag it, tag yourself, chime in. We'll bring you and keep organizing. But practically, we're asking you to take on faith that we did pretty good work with the book. It's not perfect. It's a booklet. It's 25 pages. What is the best way to start getting things out if it's a good tool, right? I mean, how many people have read the CES letter to the CES director thing, right? If you've read that, everyone's read it because it's a PDF online, free, right? I mean, how do we begin to get this out? Suggestions. BCC Books publish a hardcover, free PDF online. Yes, free PDF online. Then social media circulation. And then how do we begin to get into people's feeds?
Memes.
All right, and if it passes muster, does anyone know anyone at Deseret Books? Because I don't have that contact. Anyone know anyone who could get it on shelves? All right, then. I got you. I see you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so we're going to publish it. We're going to social media it. We can do that. And you're going to take it to the people you know in the hierarchy. And those of you who are situated in a place to take it to your bishop, stake president, Relief Society book group, young women's, young men's, you're going to do that. We're going to do some family home evening. And then I'll keep agitating all of you. Okay. And we will keep agitating all of you. Emily and I will together. Okay. All right. Just want to thank you all and say what a privilege it is to do this work in this community. And we have an opportunity because we do believe in Zion. That's what brings us to this place, to each other. And I just want to honor what Sister Stokes said, that if this is the will of God, we need to call down that power. And I hope we're starting. I hope we're starting from our end to lift up what y'all been doing for too long by yourselves. All right. Thank you all for being here.